Tony Danza may have become known as a professional boxer-turned-actor and the star of Taxi, Who's the Boss, and The Tony Danza Show, but in recent years he's tried his hand at a new career, teacher. He spent a year teaching English at Philadelphia's Northeast High School and just might have, in the process, learned as much as, if not more, than his students. He was on our show earlier this fall to talk about his book, I'd Love to Apologize to Every Teacher I Ever Had, My Year as a Rookie Teacher at Northeast High. Everyone told us they enjoyed that conversation, so we thought we would re-air it for you today. I began by asking Tony Danza, why teaching and why did you choose English as your subject? Didn't you earn a bachelor's degree in history education?
Lewis Black said, when he heard I was teaching English, said he can't even speak English. But
you went to school on a wrestling scholarship, not on a...
No, I did finish and want to be a teacher. I just, when I graduated, I wasn't ready to teach anybody anything. And so, but this has been on my mind for a long time. And at the time this started, I had just been fired from the talk show that I had here in New York. I was closing in on 60 years old, a really interesting moment in people's lives, I think. I think what happened to me is it really crystallized the fact that you only get one life and that you had to make the most of it. And this teaching thing has been in my mind for quite a while. For those people who've watched Who's the Boss, they know that my character, Tony Maselli, became a teacher. That was no accident. And so, I don't know, I just decided I wanted to try it. I wanted to see what it looks like. I'm also, I think like most Americans, you have to be concerned about the state of American education. I mean, they admit to dropping out almost 1 million kids a year. Imagine, how do you sustain a great country? So all of this came together, and it was that time of your life when I said, let me see if I can do it. Let me see.
But not really theater or performance studies. English.
English because that's what they needed at the school. I fit into the department well, and the arts and education department, and it was really great for me because, I mean, I had to learn the curriculum, and I was sometimes just a couple of days ahead of the kids, you know. And it was really...
Well, I had teachers like that, and they supposedly knew the curriculum.
But I want you to know something. I think all first-year, second-year teachers are still learning the curriculum. I mean, it takes time. I mean, it's really weird that I'm out here talking about it. I did a year. It's no small feat, believe me. 181 days, not that I was counting. But when you see the need and the commitment there and people doing it for 30 years and stuff, and don't get me wrong, there are bad teachers like the ones you just referenced, but what I saw was more discouraged teachers.
Well, what came first, the idea that you wanted to teach or the idea for a series that would be called Teaching?
No, I was the idea came first. You know, it's a product of my idiosyncrasy that I have, that when I decide to do something that I'm afraid I might not follow through on, like when I tried to write this book, I tell my friends, hey, you know, I'm writing a book. I'm going to write a book. And then a couple of weeks go by, you start hearing, hey, where's that book? When are you going to have that book? So I did the same thing with the teaching thing. I told people I was thinking about taking a couple of years and seeing if I could, if I could do something and make a little bit of a difference and get a real look. You know, we all have this conventional wisdom of what's wrong with schools. It's teachers, it's unions, it's budget cuts, whatever side of the issue you fall down on. But really, we don't know. And so I thought, and then I said it to a guy who was a reality TV producer, and immediately he said, that would make a great show.
Well, did you have to take ed courses?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I had to prepare for it. But obviously the show expedited it. Absolutely. And that really helped a lot.
Were your fellow teachers skeptical of your intentions?
I would say a healthy dose of skepticism, some more than others. I mean, I had some teachers just outright say to me, I don't like this. I don't think it's a good idea. And, the kids come first.
And there'd be cameras in the classroom.
And there'd be cameras, yeah. And that was unsettling for everybody. But, most of all, it should have been for me, because you try being a first-year teacher, it's hard enough. Try doing it on camera.
You had to win over the students, but you also had to win over the teachers. You say that you weren't required to show up in the classroom until 10 a.m., but you showed up at 7 because that's when the other teachers came in.
Well, the shooting schedule was different than the school schedule, but that was that's a perfect metaphor for the push and pull, the tug of war that goes on. And what made me worry about the show from the beginning. Here's the pros. The pro is that if you do a show, you might have a wider impact. You might actually put a spotlight on American education so that we all get a look at it. Because the only time we see inside a school is when there's a tragedy. We don't actually see what's going on. Okay. That was the pro. The con is that a TV show and a teacher have two different agendas. The TV show's agenda is ratings. The TV, the teacher's agenda are the kids. And sometimes that's, I mean, not sometimes, that is inherently going to clash.
And you quote a reporter who wrote, Tony Danza is pimping Philadelphia's kids to kickstart his faded and stalled career.
Yeah, I thought faded and stalled. Jeez.
That must have felt good to read.
Well, I mean, you know, that was representative of what, you know, there was a lot of skepticism. And I by the way, I don't blame people. It took a lot of hubris to even do it. But I wanted to see if I could really be it. And I want you to know, the greatest compliment. The other day I did a book signing, and my principal showed up to introduce me.
One from Philadelphia?
Yeah, from Northeast High, Linda Carroll. And she asked me at the end of the school year, you know, once I had shown them that I was dead serious and I was going to try my best, that she asked me what I think about coming back. And I'll be honest with you. I said, you know, I feel bad about only doing 1 year. But, Miss Carroll, I think at my age, I don't want to care this much about anything. I mean, it's that kind of a grueling sort of emotional trip.
And a lot of teachers only last a year for all sorts of reasons. But why? You grew up in Brooklyn and Long Island. Why were you teaching in Philadelphia?
They took us. Uh-huh. they were lukewarm at best here in New York. We were originally slated, and we're working in a school up in on the Bronx, Yonkers border, Lincoln High School. And hello, if anybody's listening from Lincoln, miss you. And great principal up there. And it just Mayor Nutter got wind of the project, and he thought it might be good for his school system. He's very, very, I think he really tries hard for the kids in Philadelphia. And he took a shot on me, you know, and that was it. And he gave me a choice of schools. He gave me a choice of three different schools, Furness, Central, and Northeast. And
Northeast is the biggest.
It's the biggest. 3,500 kids. There's 50 languages spoken in the school. Very diverse student body. Comprehensive high school. Everything from special ed to magnet.
But they also protected themselves. They had a veteran teacher monitor your class.
Yeah. I had David Cohen, who watched me like a hawk and plays a big part in the book. In the book, he plays a big part. Because the book, you know, what happened is the show runs for 6 weeks. They put it on at 10 o'clock at night on a Friday night. It runs for 6 weeks. And I'm very grateful to A&E for making this happen. Don't get me wrong. But in the end, they pull up stakes and they leave me there. You know, up until that moment, I thought I had finally figured out a way to make teaching pay. I would make it a TV job. But when they left, I was really like a teacher, you know.
It did give you resources that other teachers didn't
have. Oh, absolutely. Well, I have resources that other teachers don't have, you know, myself. And by the way, I just want you to know that most teachers have to take out of their own pocket because this, you get $100 a year for anything. A teacher gets $100 a whole year to buy supplies. You know, it doesn't go very far.
So you could organize a trip to D.C.
Yeah, well,
prizes for your kids.
Yeah, no,
you had 26 students also. How does that compare to a normal class size at Northeast
High? Well, students, about 26, 30 kids, 30 kids in a class, I think is about right. Let me tell you, 26 kids may not sound a lot to people, but you would be amazed. You know, each one of them has their own life. They're 15 years old, so each thing in their life is life and death. And it's you have to also try to teach the curriculum to people who may not be in the mood that day, and you have to deal with their obstacles because a teacher told me early on up in the Bronx that you have to be so many things to kids now. You have to play a lot of roles, not just a teacher. You have to play a father, mother, sister, brother, you know, counselor. Yeah, a lot of these kids have a lot of adversity in their lives.
My guest is Tony Danza. His book, I'd Like to Apologize to Every Teacher I Ever Had, My Year as a Rookie Teacher at Northeast High, is published by Crown Archetype. Were the kids selected because they'd be good on TV?
No, I don't think, no. What we tried to do was get a representative class, a representative cross-section.
10th graders.
10th graders,
is that important?
Yeah. And in fact, the school system rejected about 11 of the kids that we wanted because they were worried, because we had tried to be representative in no matter what. And we got seven of those kids in the class, seven of the ones that they rejected. We fought back, not fought back, but we argued in our, and we got those kids. So it was a really representative, a bunch of kids, you know. I mean, and I'm happy to say, by the way, they all just graduated in June, and all but two of them are going on to either college or some vocational training.
Were the students,
and I'm all over those two.
were the students around the same age as your own kids?
Yeah. Well, my daughter was in the 11th grade when I was teaching 10th grade, right?
So it probably made it a little easier for you to connect with them.
No, I don't. I think it actually. I don't think it had much bearing. Actually, you know, I mean, people, like I said, you know, teachers are responsible for 150 students. And
that's between a number of classes.
Five classes. Mm-hmm. If you change that last word to teenagers, it changes the whole thing. 150 teenagers.
So, Anna Freud once said, all teenagers are psychotic.
You know what it is? I think it's just everything is so important, you know? And so, I don't know. I mean, certainly I've been a father for a long time. You know, my son is 41 now, so, and he's got two boys. So I have some experience of being a father, but I don't know how much it helps you in front of a class.
Well, you told one interviewer that midway through the year, a student named Nakia actually started calling you Dad.
Yes, I'm very proud of that.
You're proud? That would be scary.
It is scary, but... It's just such a compliment for a kid to do that, I think.
And then you said that you wanted to give a kid who punched your student Pepper a beating he'll remember.
Yeah. Well, I come from Brooklyn. I can't help that. You know, I can't help that. Sometimes, I mean, I was small, too, when I was a kid. So I used to get beat up a little bit because I had a big mouth to go with my small body. And so I saw this kid get punched and... And it was a big kid who did it, and particularly arrogant kid. And, you know, it just, you have to be very careful to control your emotions. You really do. They push your buttons. You know, they'll drive a stake in your heart and then make you feel like you're the king of the world in the span of 2 minutes.
You describe being told repeatedly to engage the students at teacher orientation. What do you think they meant by that?
They mean you have to find a way that the kids are interested in what you're telling, what you're trying to tell them. You have to find a way. How I took it was I would have to make the lessons interesting, find a way. And by the way, it took me a long time. It took me time, and I wish I had another couple of years to really perfect it. But, you know, to try to find activities and ways to relate the lessons to their lives. I did a couple of scavenger hunts, which were very successful because competition really works with the kids. But I really tried in general to tie things to their lives.
Well, how do you get past the fact that I remember being bored stiff when we had to learn Julius Caesar? And you wound up teaching Julius Caesar.
Yeah.
You had an advantage, I imagine, as somebody who's been an actor.
I'm an actor, so I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. But you know, I'm not a Shakespearean actor by any choice. But I did a couple of things. I went back to my original theory, which is how do I connect this to your life? So I would tell the kids, you got to take advantage of this time in school. This time of your life, this is when it's important. If you don't, this the world we're living in now, if you don't have training, skills, you're not going to have a life. So this little sliver of your life, right? And so Brutus tells Cassius when they're about to go deciding when to go fight Antony, they say, in the affairs of men, there is a tide taken at its flood, leads on to fortune, omitted and the rest of your life is in shoals and in miseries. Well, what do you think he's saying? So you start to make that connection. And then I came up with this thing called Shakespeare the Street. You know, they have this lingo that they talk, you know, you be and I be and you be, don't be, do it. And so I said to them, all right, first of all, I discovered No Fear Shakespeare, which is a big thing. No Fear Shakespeare gives you the modern English right next to the old English. And so they had that, and then they turned it into their English. And we would do scenes. So you'd have to learn the scene and know what the intention was before you could do it, and you'd be amazed. I mean, here's my favorite. I think Paige said, Caesar, don't you be drawling. And I said, what's drawling? And she said, it means off the chain. So I think Shakespeare would have liked that, right?
Yeah. Well, he was inventing language.
That's what I'm saying.
You also probably was easier to teach To Kill a Mockingbird because this is something kids could connect to. And didn't the kids actually call you Atticus?
Well, it's interesting. You know, first of all, it's a wonderful book. It's a shame we all read it when we're kids. I mean, we should go back and read it. It's just incredible. But and it's easy for the kids to identify with because it's about kids. You know, it's about scouting and growing up. And so, you know, you have that. But the character that they really lit on was Atticus, the father. The father who understands, the father who doesn't yell at his kids, who sits with his kids and reads and respects them and treats them as, you know, as humans. And it's incredible. And so then they made me a picture book at the end of the year. They're going to make me cry. They made me a picture, an album. And there was all sorts of things in there. There were some things that, like my 10 stupidest things that I did in class. Like, I always say idea instead of idea. Mm-hmm. And so the kids would made this up. But on one page, there was a full-page picture of me at a football game in a Northeast sweatshirt. And I'm cheering or something. And above it, they wrote, "Our Atticus." And that's praise indeed.
Well, you got a lot of advice from teachers as well. David Cohn, who you mentioned, the guy who monitored you, told you, you can't let the students see that they get to you. You were also told on your first day of teaching by a veteran teacher, never smile before Christmas. Yeah. Smiling puts you at their mercy. They'll eat you
They'll
alive.
They'll eat you alive, he said. Yes. I hadn't
you
even
cry.
Been to
you
the
school. Smile after Christmas.
I had been to the school, and I went to this school supply store to buy some posters, the only place success comes before work is in the dictionary, those kind of things, you know. And I was getting, checked out, and he saw that I had more than normal teachers, so he knew something was up. And he knew about it because he had read the paper and about me pimping. And he wanted to give me some advice, and he told me, do yourself a favor. Because he was a school teacher moonlighting, by the way, to make some extra money. And he said, do yourself a favor. Don't smile before Christmas. They'll eat you alive. I said, oh, God. I was thinking that was going to be my biggest weapon. You know, I
smiling.
Could only smile. Yeah,
but because, you cried in front of the kids. Did that make you too vulnerable?
No. I think it says – I think there's important – one of the most important things that we're missing is that we don't send a message that we care. That this is – we tell them it's important, but we don't send a message that we care. Now, don't get me wrong. I am the firm believer that the only way this will ever, ever straighten itself out is if the kids it's like we need like some kind of a campaign, much like the one that changed the attitude of the country on smoking or drunk driving, that says, you know, this is not the world that it used to be. The world you're living in now compels you to have skills, to go to college, to make the most of this time in school, not like it was when I was a kid, when we weren't competing with the rest of the world. And until we can get that, I don't think we'll get there. But in the meantime, You can't lay off the school nurse. You can't have a rundown building and tell kids it's important. They go to the mall. They see what's important. You can't tell them hard work and good behavior will pay off, and then they get to watch Jersey Shore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all lip service. Do you remember when we were kids?
Well, first of all, I want to ask you. Were you a disruptive student?
Yes, I was. Just let me make this point. When we were kids, we really did nurture our children. I mean, there was a guy on TV. I don't remember the show. It ended at 7:30, and the guy would say, it was my favorite show. He'd say, it's now time for all good children to go to sleep. And we'd go to sleep. Or you'd watch, cartoons. Now they just want to sell a kid something, you know. And so that's the message is there all the time. And the messages they get from the culture, which undermine education every day. I think that's the two prongs of making it work.
When kids were acting out, were you reminded of yourself when you were a kid?
Absolutely. That's another reason for the title. I was that kid that thought, first of all, I could charm the teacher and do as little as I possibly could and get by. And I'm like a lot of people. You know, I've been out on this thing, and people say the same thing to me all the time. Oh, I feel that way, too. I didn't take advantage. I didn't apply myself. And Arthur Miller said the best we can hope for is that we end up with the right regrets. Well, that's one of those regrets that's not so good, you know. And that's what I was trying to impress upon the kids. They don't learn from my mistake. Don't end up like that.
Do you relate to the teachers who went on strike in Chicago?
I do.
Because a lot of people are blaming them.
I know. But, you know, there's always the other side of the story. Don't get me wrong. I want the kids back in school, and I'm glad to see today they did so. I want the kids back in school. I want the families that are disrupted not to be disrupted anymore. But this is symptomatic of the problem. It's not just the strike. It's symptomatic of how bad things are. Could you imagine that the union would be willing to suffer the public relations disaster in this political environment and still go on a strike? It's crazy. But 87% of the kids in the Chicago school system are eligible for the free breakfast and free lunch program. In fact, they were feeding them during the strike. There are 200 nurses. You can get sick on Wednesday, but you can't get sick on Thursday because there's no nurse. There's very few social workers in the most troubled schools, in schools where 90% of the kids are living at the poverty level and have these troubles. They don't have any social workers. Privatization of public schooling is ongoing.
And it's obvious to me that despite the fact that you're not teaching anymore, you still see yourself as an advocate for schools and teachers.
Well, I'm big hooked up to Northeast. You know, I go down. I just did a fundraiser. And like I said, I was the commencement speaker again this year. And so I got a little scholarship program. No, I want to stay involved. I think it's important. I think it's a national security issue. I want you to know, I wish my parents were around. I wrote a book. it's really exciting.
And also, I'm sure that they were worried about you when you were acting out in school.
I think so, too.
You described yourself as a poor student.
No, I wasn't poor student. I just didn't take it seriously. The other day I was on a Today show, and they brought a teacher. They brought one of my teachers. And I didn't know that that year that he was there. I was my 11th grade, and he was a first-year teacher. And I tortured the guy. I just tortured him, you know. And he was there saying good things, nice things about me. It's a crazy thing. So I wasn't the worst, but I just didn't work hard enough.
Tony Danza's book, I'd Like to Apologize to Every Teacher I Ever Had, My Year as a Rookie Teacher at Northeast High, is published by Crown Archetype. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. And the thing with the book is if you're a teacher, you'll see you're not the only one crying.